Small details or big surfaces, tight corners or odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Here we go. 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 This is it.
This is Top Flight Time Machine. I am Andy Hotbody Dawson. Pow, pow, pow.
I'm Sam Nifty Delaney. So what?
Welcome along to the Friday morning episode, Sam. Sam! Have you started watching the Beatles documentary yet?
No, I haven't. It was we had birthday shenanigans at this house all day yesterday.
Right. So happy birthday to whoever it was.
It was Len, and there wasn't a moment in the day to watch the Beatles, and I wanted to really put time aside. I didn't want to be stopping and starting.
Well, I was supposed to be watching it with my daughter, and she wasn't available yesterday, and I said, I'll wait until you're ready. And by 10 o'clock last night, I just buckled and started on it.
Fuck this, I'm watching it.
It's fine, because I will watch it with her. I'll watch it all again.
Yeah.
It is incredible.
Is it?
Oh, God. It's just, I don't know, it's not for everyone, but the concept of for everyone is overrated anyway.
Oh,
you know what I mean? If
no
you're into the Beatles.
Stuff's for everyone, is it?
I'll tell you what it is. It's 8 hours of the Beatles sitting around chatting and bickering with each other and just being the Beatles. And I can't think of anything I'd rather watch more than that.
I mean, it's just a privilege to see that sort of thing.
It is.
I mean,
that's exactly what it is.
You know, if you took away their sort of cultural significance, you think, well, here's four interesting, erudite, charismatic, intelligent people.
Yeah.
Who are also have also got a sense of humour, very funny, just having a laugh. And that's quite, you know, interesting in itself. But then when you sort of think how much they mean to everything that surrounds us now.
Yeah.
And this isn't a pretentious thing to say. I mean, even down to this podcast, right, what you and I do for a living, you can make a 6 degrees of separation between the sort of cultural impact that the Beatles had, the cultural social impact that the Beatles had, and sort of everything that goes on culturally around us, certainly popular culture now, right? The idea that two blokes can make a living out of talking shit and then putting it out on the internet, right? I happen to believe that the Beatles have sort of had a ripple effect onto fucking everything.
It's a direct consequence of the Beatles'
existence. No, that's not what I'm saying. That is not what I'm saying.
And
even more importantly than that, I am not for a moment putting us not on a similar level to Beatles, but nowhere in the same stratosphere. What I'm saying is that what you had was four working class lads from Liverpool, right, who didn't really change the way they looked or the way they talked or anything else. They just and they didn't try to conform to anything that was sort of prevalent in popular culture such as it was at that time. You know, they just started like having the piss sort of thing and doing what they thought was a laugh and seeing if it could, you know, be successful and popular. And because it was so massively popular, after that all different areas of culture took a chance on people dicking around, right, in case it turned into magic. Now in some cases like this, it didn't turn into magic. It just is two people dicking around. It's of no real significance whatsoever. But I think that the opportunities for people, whether it's to write books, make films, design clothing, fucking paint pictures, or whatever the fuck it is, I think the fact that four blokes from Liverpool did it and it turned into a multi-billion pound fucking massive, huge thing that was very commercial but never sold out or lost any of its credibility, that has a big effect on the world, doesn't it?
Completely. I mean, that's something I was thinking about. I've only watched an hour of it so far. There's two episodes out as of today. I've only watched an hour of it. But 8 hours of watching the Beatles just sitting around isn't enough for me. I want more. But that's what I was thinking. I was thinking as I was watching them just kind of sort of standing around and sitting around just noodling and just putting stuff together and having ideas and talking about what they're planning to do for this whole project. It was like nobody else had ever done anything on that scale of being so popular I mean, they were wildly popular, the biggest group of the 20th century, easily. But also at the same time, forging new ground artistically and being experimental in that prism of being hugely popular. No one's ever done that. No one's ever going to do that again, I don't think.
And if you look at, I remember saying to my dad, I was saying, what I don't understand is when I was first very, very into Beatles when I was a teenager, and I got, you know, because you're into them when you're a kid, and then when I was a teenager, I went turbo into them. And I remember just badgering my dad the whole time with questions about the Beatles. And I said, what I don't understand is they weren't actually around that long.
How responsive was he to your questions about the Beatles, Sam?
Depended on his mood.
Oh, God. Okay.
Yeah, so they'd be, fuck off. Well, the thing about my dad is you never know when he might just turn round and just to amuse himself say, I don't know why you're talking about the Beatles, they're shit. Yeah. Right, just, he might say that one day. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. Just for a laugh. I would say he's got no time whatsoever for John Lennon. That's one of his things. If you start him off on John Lennon, and he's met John Lennon on more than one occasion, but I don't think that's why he doesn't like John Lennon. I think he thinks John Lennon was a pretentious phony sort of thing.
Well, Lennon's really interesting in this because Lennon is really subdued in it. McCartney is completely leading the group at this point. Lennon, for whatever reason, whether it's emotional or whether it's narcotic or whatever, I don't know, but he's just really not contributing very much in the first hour that I've seen anyway. And McCartney is having to lead the group, and he kind of apologises for being a bossy dick, which is kind of what he's being. He's getting on George's tits. But McCartney, this is McCartney in his absolute pomp. Yeah. At his most creative at this period. He was fucking flying. There's a bit in it where Paul just comes up with Get Back, the song.
Yeah.
Just sits there and comes up with it. And it's one of the most astonishing things I've ever seen because it's almost like he's possessed. He goes into like a different place and he just starts playing this kind of riff on his bass. And then this song just slowly develops. It's like he's got a piece of musical clay in his head, and he's forging it into a pot or a vase or whatever. He's making it into a thing in his head, and it just over the course of about 3 minutes, it comes to life. It's fucking astonishing, honestly.
That, to see that, God, is just incredible. And the fact that footage has existed all this time and has only now come to light,
yeah,
I mean, it's just incredible. You know, it's like, we've just come across this fucking Michelangelo here at work. We didn't know we had it before, but we do.
I'm only an hour into it, but I know now it's up there with Sopranos, and it's going to be something where at any point in my life I can put it on at any place of the 8 hours and just watch it for a bit. And I know that my life's going to be better at the end of that. Because the Sopranos, I don't watch Sopranos sequentially anymore. I'll just dip in and watch an episode if it's on. Like, they're on in the afternoon now on Sky Atlantic. You've got to put your PIN number in, because obviously adult content. But sometimes Sopranos is on at 1 in the afternoon, and I'll just stick one on, whichever one happens to be on.
If you've got Sky, the box sets are all there. You can watch it.
They're all there.
You
can watch them there. But I'll just watch one wherever, whichever one they're showing. Because...
You call it Sopranos potluck, don't you?
Surprise Sopranos, I call it. Yeah. this is going to be the same. This is the same. I'll maybe go to episode 2 of this 3-part documentary, or I'll just go into it at hour 4 and just watch it for a bit, and it's just going to be like life enhancing. It's incredible. It really is.
The thing that my dad used to say was, they had this mop top thing at the beginning. I said, and then they were like, you know, then there was Sergeant Pepper, and then they were all hippies. I said, they changed so much. I said, they just kept jumping on whatever the trend, the fashion was as it changed. And he went, no, what you don't understand is, you stupid bastard, you look back, he said, you think that these fashions change and they change with them. He went, no, they were changing the fashions.
They were the trends.
No one had hair like that and was doing that kind of music until they did it. And then they changed up again. And it was them who came back from India like hippies. And then everyone else started becoming hippies. All of the different styles of music was just, they were pushing it, they were pushing it. And what's really interesting in music is that a lot of your kind of legacy acts, your big acts, stop doing good songs because they find a point at which they can keep generating a certain amount of cash by just knocking out, you know, a six to seven out of 10 sort of output all the time, right?
Yeah.
And it's simpler that way than taking
jaded,
risks.
Don't they?
They get jaded. And what it means is that it's your, like, it's a pension scheme, right?
Mm-hmm.
So someone said that to me recently about Noel Gallagher. You know, I'm using that example just because it was a conversation I had. Right. We won't get into the fact that you don't like him, right? But just as an example, you go, right, okay, in the early days of Oasis, he seemed capable of, like, knocking out really incredible melodies, right? Actually, it doesn't matter whether or not you like music or not. He could write really great tunes that had hooks to them and that everyone sort of heard on the radio once and wanted to buy, right? And
I don't mind Noel, by the way. I don't mind Noel. It's Liam I can't be arsed with, but I don't mind Noel.
Okay. But Oasis, I know you're not, like, a huge fan of Oasis, but, like, for those first two, for about their first 5 years, it was just like he wrote a song and it was immediately a song that people fell in love with and could remember every note of, right?
Well,
and
then there was a point
where it just kind of, like, drifted into sort of more middle of the road, and it was like, how can you have the ability to write an incredible melody 1 minute and then it goes, right? Because it's almost like you pulled off a formula here. It's like never ending. You've got a never ending well of melody. But in a way, it's almost like they choose to just stick in one place where they think this is what I've got. I've got a base audience here who like this. And if we just keep tuning it out, we're on Easy Street, as Honest John would say, forever, right? But the Beatles never got to, like, I don't know, Rubber Soul and thought, ah, fucking hell, this is our best album. We might as well just keep putting stuff like this out. They're like, fuck that, tear it up, we'll do Sgt. Pepper now. And then Sgt. Pepper sort of changed pop music, and they go, fuck that, tear it up, we'll do the White Album.
Yeah, but there's footage in this early on, it shows you the kind of years before this that goes right through their career. And there's a bit where I think it's George who says, it laughs at the idea that this could be a long-term thing. And they just think it's going to be a flash in the pan. And I think Paul says something like, we're comfortable now, we don't have to keep doing this sort of thing. So there was no guarantees that what they were going to do as they made each leap was going to continue to be popular, but it was, and it's that thing of being hugely popular.
Maybe that's it. Maybe it was because, like, they'd been poor. Now they were rich. Of course, they could be richer, but to them, they were like, well, we don't need more than this.
I mean,
so
let's
just fucking gamble because we're never going to be poor again.
There's nothing to lose. Getting back to Noel Gallagher, I think Noel Gallagher's solo stuff, his high-sided vehicles group, whatever they're called, that's not the same as what Liam's doing, because Liam is doing that kind of almost self-tribute band thing. He's got writers
in, like,
doing his songs
for Oasis. Yeah,
it is. Yeah, Noel's trying to do different stuff, and I think it's alienating a lot of his audience, if anything.
Yeah,
is
I think he likes
that.
Obviously his hero's Paul Weller, one of his heroes, and he likes the way that Weller constantly tried to alienate his own fans.
Yeah, yeah.
Because he's like, if I've alienated the old fans, it shows I'm doing something right, I'm moving forward.
No, couldn't give a fuck, really, about whether people like it or not, which is a good, healthy place to be in. So,
well, I really like Noel Gallagher, so I didn't want to sound like I was being, like, negative about him. I suppose it was just an example someone used, is that sometimes the music, I don't know, but basically not many musicians or artists in any field have the balls to just think, right, we've done that, it was a success, but now let's just change and go to something else.
And it's like different, your life changes. Like, Noel Gallagher got heavily into cocaine. His financial circumstances became really comfortable. All that can change your motivation for doing what you do artistically sometimes, and I think that's a factor. The Beatles, the fact that the Beatles did what they did in fucking under 8 years, I will never, ever get my head around that.
The fact that those four people, particularly songwriters of the quality of George Harrison, John Lennon, Paul McCartney, all happen to, like, live near each other and meet each other.
Yeah.
See, a lot of people mock me for my, my beliefs about the cosmos, right? And my curiosity about there being, you know, an intelligent architect somewhere at play, right? Mm. In the cosmos. But you sort of think, fuck it. Fuck, no way does that fucking happen by chance, that those three cunts all just bump into each other and start writing songs together and the whole fucking planet falls in love with it, and it's still all these years later the world's favourite music and people are obsessed with it.
Yeah.
Fuck, no fucking way. You know, it's just fucking beyond, that's beyond fucking plausibility. Mm-hmm. It's beyond plausibility. Of course, George, I suppose, I mean, I can't wait to watch it. Maybe we should return to it when I have, but like, George was getting pissed off all the time when he goes, because at this stage, what's this, 1969 or something?
69, January 69, yeah.
Right. So just before they're like, just after this, they split up, don't they? But George is like,
he's on a higher
spiritual plane at this point, mate. He's like, You lot don't understand. I'm living outside of the fucking material world here. You lot are still fucking chatting about the material world that you can touch and feel and see as if that's a reality. I've moved way beyond that, cunts.
It's kind of not, though, because just from the hour that I've seen, George is still in his shell almost. I know George has had like one song on each album kind of up until this point, and he's written loads more, which he then did on his first solo album. But George says himself, he says it was only until the White Album, which is the one before this one, he says this: the White Album was the first one where I felt as though I could express myself or whatever properly within the group. He'd kind of almost been that third part, and he'd been almost just the guitarist, and he chucked some songs in, and he's just starting to become creative and wanting to be an equal partner creatively with Paul and John. But there's a vacuum, because John is out of it at this point. John is just not really... Yoko sat there next to him sometimes, doing a bit of crochet or whatever, just hanging about. John is just not there. Paul is completely in charge of everything. So that's kind of pissing Harrison off a bit, because Harrison wants to contribute more, but Paul is now completely the dominant figure in it. And Paul's a bit patronising to George at one point, and there's a little bit of a skirmish between them. But like Paul, like I said, Paul apologises for being the bossy dickhead in it. But he has to, because it's been John and Paul's vehicle up until then.
And John's just fucking losing the plot.
John is
he's fallen under the spell of Yoko and possibly heroin, we don't know.
Possibly heroin, yeah. So Paul is dragging this fucking juggernaut along, basically, himself, like the world's strongest man, you know, where they drag the tractor. It's like that. And George wants to do more, but that's not how it works. That's not how it's worked so far.
I was sort of... I was very much regarded, well, it was well known that I was physically the strongest of the four Beatles. right from the start, back in Liverpool, they used to call me Strong Paul. And I only got stronger through our years together. And John was well aware of that, and he always resented it to a large extent.
Every year at about Christmas time, we do a little thing behind closed doors called the World's Strongest Beatle. And we go to Iceland. And we take part in various feats of strength, the four of us. And I always won.
Quite easily as well. Ringo was always second. John was third. And, of course, George was a real weed. He'd always come in last. But he said he didn't mind because he said he was spiritually strong. I said, well, maybe we should do world strong, spiritually strongest Beatle, but I can't see that taking off.
I said, good luck to you, George, if anyone ever breaks into your house and tries to kill you. With that kind of weedy strength.
It was actually George, Elvis when we went to see Elvis at Graceland. He was the one who got us into it because he used to compete with the Memphis Mafia, who were his sort of, you know, entourage. And he'd say, "Oh, make him compete with me over strength." And you know, he gathered us all around in his. He had a utility room where he had his washing machine and tumble dryer, which we'd never seen before because we didn't have them in Liverpool. And he'd make them all lift things of various weights and then, you know, fight him at karate. But it was quite clear to us that they were too scared for their livelihoods to ever do anything.
I mean, the
other
clue
than
was
let
probably,
him win.
The clue was in the title of the contest itself. It was called the World's Strongest Elvis. I mean, who's going to win that every year?
It was obvious that he was going to win.
Is it? It's not going to be Scotty
Moore. He's going, they don't let me win. They give it their best shot. They just can't take out my strength.
Oh, they ain't as strong as the king. Oh.
In the end, I fought Elvis, and I beat him quite easily. He was doing his kung fu, whereas I use more of a Liverpudlian street fighting technique. And I beat him, and he draws out, and that's why from then on he tried to have the president ban us from the United States. And it was all because he knew I was stronger than him. I don't like that Paul McCartney. He fights 30. He's a 30 fighter. He grabbed me by the balls.
I don't mind the skinny kid who sits in the corner saying his prayers. He's pretty cool. But not Paul.
Paul McCartney is a dirty fighter. He pulled my hair and he punched my balls.
Jalapeño.
Here's a brief but annoying message to let you know that you wouldn't be hearing this brief but annoying message if you were a subscriber to our Iron Filing Society Patreon offering.
For the price of a pint and a St. Clement's each month, you can get up to 4 episodes a week, 9 months before the rest of the world gets them. Early access to regular episodes, lots of other marvellous benefits, and there's absolutely no adverts or brief but annoying messages like this that'll get right on your tits.
Find out more and subscribe now at tftimemachine.com/ironfilings.
Jalapeño.
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners are odd shapes. Flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous 2-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Jalapeño, jalapeño.
So all I want to do today is just sit and watch the Beatles. But I've got a lot on.
What
so
a great day.
I'll have to do it later on.
Make a pot of tea. Get yourself
that's
a biscuit.
That's all I want to do, but I've got some things to take care of.
Do you follow an account on Twitter called Teetles? And it's such a lovely account because it basically combines two of my favourite things in life, tea and the Beatles. And all it is pictures of the Beatles drinking tea.
And there it is,
it's incredible the amount. You'd think, oh, that can't sustain a Twitter account. It's been going for years. Fucking can, mate. Because they fucking love tea and they drank it all the fucking time.
They did. There's lots of tea going on in this fucking documentary as well. Yeah.
And in actual fact, a lot of the images are from these sessions because I think there was a lot of images from these sessions. Mm. But this is the first time we've seen all the film. And the cups that they use, that they're drinking tea in, I believe it's from these sessions. So you'll have seen them. They're mugs with stripes around them.
Yeah.
Of varying colours, like hooped stripes, yeah? And and you can actually, on this Teetles Twitter account, there's actually, you can buy them.
Oh.
And I'm so weird, I'm like, yeah, I'm fucking going to get some of those Teetles mugs. I've got to be drinking tea out of the same mugs as those cunts.
I'm going to do that now. I'm on that account.
Have you seen
now.
It? Have you seen the mugs? They're really nice mugs, I think.
I've seen the, they do a book as well, Teetles Book 12. Fucking hell.
Yeah, I mean, fucking hell. And also, all joking aside, that makes me like the Beatles even more. Like, these guys, they fucking knew the score. Do you know what I mean? Not that, like, they were balls deep into being the most famous people in the world by the time this was going on, right? Mm-hmm. But they weren't like one of these fucking silly bands who were doing, I mean, obviously John had fallen into drug taking. They smoked a bit of dope. But they weren't fucking doing loads of cocaine and buying their own fucking jumbo jet to fly around in.
Yeah, yeah.
They were back at Abbey Road drinking tea, having biscuits. And fucking crafting, yeah.
That's the thing.
And the fact that they love tea means quite a lot to me, actually.
Yeah. That's the thing. It's that thing that happened in under 8 years. Is it blows my mind. I mean, you can get groups now that take 8 years between their two albums quite easily. And the fact they did all of that from Mop Tops, just back from Hamburg, right through to this documentary thing. I mean, after this documentary, they then went on and recorded Abbey Road. Which was the last album they recorded, but it came out before Let It Be, the album. So they were flipped. So you know, this isn't even near the end. It's
didn't John take the tapes from this session in the end and go off and get them produced by Phil Spector?
Yeah.
Behind
everyone's back, yeah. And Phil Spector, who was slightly nuts by then, put like orchestral stuff on them. Let It Be is my least favourite Beatles album.
I like Let It Be, but it's not my favourite. What's your favourite?
It fluctuates between Abbey Road, Revolver and Rubber Soul. Side two of Abbey Road is perfection, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, I love Abbey Road. I like the White Album, mate. I've always had a big soft spot for the White Album.
That's a close fourth, I reckon. But Rubber Soul, I think, is underrated. Rubber Soul's just jammed full of brilliant pop songs. Mm. I love it.
Here's another point, actually. Talking about them not getting into coke like so many bands did, right? There's a lot of silly rock and roll mythology around basically the supposed benefits of hedonism to artistic expression.
Yeah.
And it's all fucking utter bollocks. And it's one of the things that can fuel bad habits in young people, because you kind of think, yeah, rock and roll, this is what being creative's all about. But in fact, it's just depressing. And, you know, the best bands, they weren't fucking doing loads of coke or being fucking alcoholics. Do you know what I mean? Look at the Beatles here. They've been going for years. This is their last recording, the last album they ever fucking recorded, right? And look at them. They're at like, for the most part, Paul McCartney, like you say, is like, this is Imperial McCartney, yeah? Mm. Where he's just fucking shitting out classics left, right and centre. He can't even keep up. He's like, get me a bocha. They're falling out of my ass. Catch them before they hit the floor.
It's the shitting and puking thing at the same time. He's shitting out classics out of his ass, and he's
shitting,
throwing
puking and wanking
the
all
at
once, mate.
And having a wank.
I'm certain puking and wanking here.
A celebratory wank.
Yeah. I've just wanked out. She came in through the bathroom window. I've shat. Get back. And I've puked polythene Pam. Anyway.
Yeah, but I was going to say Let It Be is my least favourite. I mean, the McCartney stuff on there, The Long and Winding Road, and Let It Be itself, I'm not, they're a bit too syrupy, I think.
Oh, I fucking love The Long and Winding Road, mate. But I know what you mean, they're very syrupy.
It's like that thing where I've heard it too much.
Yeah.
But,
But anyway, you know, the best music is made sort of on tea. The best music was made on tea because the best music's by the Beatles.
Yeah. Listen, people will occasionally hear us slurping tea in the background while we're recording this podcast.
There you go. Brings it back to what I said at the beginning of the show.
I didn't mention it, but I saw your good wife come in there at the beginning of this episode and deliver you what I assume was a cup of tea.
That's right.
As we started, I've got one on the go here as well. It is the fuel of creativity. Do you think we are the Beatles of podcasting, Sam?
No, this is what I'm desperate for. See, I thought that, oh, God, as soon as I said it at the start, I thought first Andy's going to say, you're trying to make out we're like the Beatles, and then other people. That's obviously not what I'm saying. We're not the Beatles of podcasting, but are we influenced by Beatles? Of course we are, because fucking everyone is, whether they know it or not.
Mm-hmm.
We all are. Do you know what I mean? That's a good thing.
I think we're the blancmange of podcasting.
I think we're the splodginess abounds of podcasting.
It's for others
and
to decide.
That's
not us.
Fair. We know our place.
Yeah.
And that's all fair. Talking
that's
of podcasts,
fine.
I've been listening to this podcast, which is I heard people talking about on Twitter, right? And it's called Sweet Bobby. Which I obviously appealed to me because it's a bit like Beeping Timmy. Right, have you heard of this podcast? People have been talking about it, right? Have you heard of it?
Nope.
Right, fucking hell, mate. It's amazing in that it's just so fucking stupid, right? It's like, it's one of these sort of true crime things, right? But I don't really listen to true crime I don't engage in the true crime thing because I not really a fan of it. But a couple of people whose opinion I respect tweeted about it. So I thought, I'll give it a fucking go. I've got nothing better to do. I was out running. Right, so I stuck it on, but basically, spoiler alert, right, I'm going to fucking tell you what it's about.
Mm-hmm.
It's about someone who pranks another person online by pretending to be some geezer chatting her up, and it goes on for years, and in the end, she realises it was all a fucking wind-up.
For years? Fucking hell, yeah.
Goes on. It's a wind-up that lasts for years, right?
Right.
And that's it. That is it. And, you know, not to belittle the impact it had on the victim of this wind-up, because obviously that's horrible. No one likes to be hoodwinked, do they?
No, of course not.
That's what it was. It was what it was. There was no kind of... No one was physically abused. No one was stolen from other than their time and their feelings.
And their emotions, yeah.
But what I've realised is, Andy, this is really popular. Lots of people are talking about it. And it's got two things, right? Because I'm thinking, if you strip it down, the story is, as I've just told you, in about under a minute, I've explained to you what the entire story is, right?
Yeah.
And it's nothing more, nothing less than what I've said. But people are going on about, oh my God, this is incredible. This is what great podcasting is all about. This is just simply great journalism, right? And I thought, oh, that's interesting. Why is everyone going, I keep waiting for there to be a big reveal. I keep thinking it's going to be like All the President's Men. And in the end, they're going to reveal that, in fact, it was fucking Obama who was scamming someone. And the whole thing goes to the very heart of the military-industrial complex. But it is just a thing about someone just winding up another person, it getting a bit out of hand. And I realise what they've done is, right, two things. One is they've got mysterious, creepy, true crime music playing underneath everything that the narrator says, right? And so the narrator could say something of absolutely no consequence whatsoever, like, but then I realised that the person I was talking about was actually eating a biscuit. And they go... and you're supposed to go, whoa, wow. Because if you read it on paper, and the other thing is, they've got a very sort of almost irritatingly posh journalist who's responsible for this investigation. I'm doing quote marks, right? I thought that was curious and I wanted to know more. So I went to meet Sweet Bobby at a cafe in London. Background noise, right? And I thought, if you do a sort of a posh journalistic form of narration and add some dramatic music, you could turn almost any fucking story or anecdote into a piece of investigative journalism. Stick it out on a podcast, right? And as long as it's been published, this one's published by some people called Tortoise Media, but you know, them or the BBC or something like that, or one of them American ones like Luminary, and suddenly it's like you're taking something that someone might... I'm telling you, right, if someone told you this anecdote in the pub, you'd probably fucking drift off after a couple of minutes and go, yeah, I fancy some crisps. I'm going to get some crisps. Sorry, mate, you were saying something.
Yeah, exactly.
What's that? Your mate got wound up on the internet. Oh, that's a shame, right? But you had a posh sort of self-important narrator and some spooky music. You can turn everything. I mean, to be honest, we could take one of our anecdotes from this. Like, I tell you what, right? One of your stories that just off the top of my head that I've always quite enjoyed is the time that someone you used to know knocked on your door and you lay down on the floor to pretend you were out, right?
Yeah.
I mean, there's but you tell the story better, but that's the story. Yeah. And I think they went to a phone box at one point and started calling your house.
They went to the phone box and then rang... And the phone rang for 20 minutes.
Yeah, and you remained lying flat on the floor, I think.
Flat on the floor with your hands over my ears, Well, maybe not.
So, great story. Possible to tell it in maximum 3 minutes, right?
Easily.
Drag it out over 6 episodes. Put some music under it, mate. I'm fucking telling you, you're going to win an award.
Yeah. I thought the ordeal was over, but then...
Exactly.
The phone rang.
That's exactly it. You haven't even heard this podcast and you just did a fucking pitch perfect parody of it, mate.
But then the phone rang. In the next episode, I'll talk about how the phone rang.
Yeah. And then there's flash forward bits. Goes, I thought it had stopped ringing, but it didn't. And I started to think to myself, will this ever end?
I mean, I get what you're saying. I think culturally there's so much stuff now. And I think the bar is set so low for what's seen to be good. And everyone gets onto things and there's like this collective mania about stuff.
Yeah.
Really just turns out to be quite fucking thin.
But mate, a lot of it's posturing, isn't it? A lot of it's like people wanting to seem like in with the in crowd on social media.
Yeah.
Some cunt will go, this is good. And then because that's a cunt that you want to align yourself with, you go, oh, yes, it is good, isn't it? Like you'll that. Get, and then before you know it, everyone's going, yes, it's good, let's be friends. And in fact, it's like, look, it's shit. Let's fucking all own up to this, right? It's bollocks.
Yeah, you sometimes you'll get a thread on Twitter that goes viral. It's like a 27-part thread, and it's someone recounting a tale of something that's happened, almost like this Bobby thing. It's something that happened within a friendship or something, and they tell the story over 27 tweets or whatever, and everyone's like, oh, you must read this thread. And I usually get like 4 tweets in. I'm like, fuck off.
This is bollocks.
Yeah, get on with it.
You know, like we've discussed Zippy extensively, right, on this fucking podcast. And then I wrote my thoughts, a lot of which we'd sort of discussed on this podcast, in my big issue column 1 week. I probably got retweeted about 10 times when I published that. I mean, you know, it's fucking... Listen, that I'm going to fucking tweet it out. Thing I wrote a few months ago about Zippy, right? Yeah. Way better than fucking Sweet Bobby. And I know that sounds arrogant, right? I'm not saying it's like as culturally significant as the Beatles. I'm not saying that, Andy. Mm. What I'm saying is it more interesting than Sweet Bobby? Yeah, it fucking is.
Can you be honest? I'm not making a podcast series.
I tell you what I'm not doing. I'm not going, I've had some thoughts about Zippy from Rainbow. Please read a short thread that follows of 27 fucking tweets, you fucking daft cunts.
That's what blogs are for, you cunt.
Yeah.
Do a blog. Well, yeah, I will not be listening to Sweet Bobby then.
I kind of want you to though, mate.
Even though I wasn't aware of it to start with.
I know you won't.
Fucking.
But honestly, I kind of wish that instead of telling you about it, I'd just said, please listen to Sweet Bobby and share your thoughts.
I know it's the arena that you and I dance in, but podcasts, fuck me. There's podcasts so many fucking chances and blowhards and fucking wasters in the podcast arena. It's ridiculous.
I would include us in that, by the way.
No, I wouldn't include us in that. I think this is a fucking really exceptional thing we do. I do. I think it's brilliant. And a lot of the listeners do as well. I know that. Right. Do you want to do some predictions?
Yeah.
Very quickly before we go. Okay, are you ready? Arsenal versus Newcastle.
1-0 Arsenal. Gone for a result spot.
I think 3-0 Arsenal. Burnley versus Spurs. I will go for 2-1 to Burnley.
Oh, I was going to say that. I'm going to go...
No, go for it. Whatever.
No, I'm going to say 3-1 Burnley.
3-1 Burnley. Okay.
God, the claret.
Manchester City versus West Ham United. Are you going to predict a win for this one, Sam? For West Ham?
Yeah, I'm going to say Man City 0, West Ham 1.
Okay. I'm going to go for 2-0 to Man City. Sorry. Onwards. You can get your revenge here. Cambridge versus Sunderland.
I don't know what the fuck's going on with Cambridge, but I'm going to say 1-1, play it safe.
They sound a bit soppy, though.
It's the sort of place that shouldn't even have a fucking football team. Do you know what I mean? Cambridge. Sorry if you're listening in Cambridge, but we happen to know that no one in the East Anglia sort of region listens to us, so it's no problem.
I'm going to go 1-0 to Cambridge.
Dear Sam and Andy, sorry to be a Lampard, but Cambridgeshire is not really East Anglia, as Sam said. You know what I fucking mean.
Also, I am a listener, as proven by this correspondence.
Good day.
Hull versus Millwall, finally.
I really like Hull. I don't know why, but I've just got a thing about Hull City, the city of Hull. Okay. Good team. You would have thought. There's so many teams that use lions, and there's a load of teams that use shit birds like fucking cockerels or liver birds for their fucking thing, cockerels, badge.
For example.
Right? Why? Yeah, just to take one example, right? What? But the tiger is the best animal. And why is there only one fucking team that's gone, fuck this, we're going to... What do you want to put on the badge? You can put anything, really. It doesn't have to... Does it have to be an animal that's in our town, like a rat or a pigeon? Nah, it doesn't matter. Millwall will use a fucking lion. Have you seen any fucking lions in Bermondsey? Of course you haven't. It's fucking open season. Coventry have got a fucking elephant. That's how mental they are in Coventry. You can think outside the box. Well, if you're saying we can choose fucking anything, and we're a sporting team who want to fucking inspire fear and respect throughout the land, then there's only one fucking choice. It's a tiger. All right, you can have a tiger. And then, so that's what makes Hull one of the best football clubs in the country. It's because someone there has had some fucking imagination. Right? They had the same conversation over at Tottenham, and someone's gone, I quite like the cockerel. I think that's a majestic animal. Right? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Fucking tiger, mate. Go on, so the Tigers.
Tigers versus 2-0. Lions, then. What do you reckon? What?
Tigers versus Lions. 2-0 to the Tigers.
The Tigers. I'm going to go 3-1 to the Tigers.
Plus the House Martins. That's the other reason.
House Martins. Always the House Martins. That's about it for this episode. I just want to wish me mate John a happy 50th birthday before we go.
Very good, John.
Yeah.
Is John going to be there at our Christmas party? I hope
so. I think he's thinking about coming along, yeah. So we're going out tonight to have some food and some booze. So I'm really looking forward to that.
What are you going to eat, mate? Are you going for a curry or something?
Turkish, I reckon.
Oh, I love a Turkish.
I'll report back on that. So I know John's a listener, so happy birthday, mate. And there we are. That's it from this one. And I'm going back to watch the Beatles now. Bye-bye.
Have a good weekend. Bye.
Small details are big surfaces, tight corners are odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.